Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you through topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're coming off of another UFC event. This time it was UFC Edmonton, which of course went down in Edmonton, Canada. We were back in the lovely nation of Canada. And honestly, you know, I was unable to catch this event. I can't lie, I didn't really see anything. I only caught highlights here and there and saw the results. But that's because I was celebrating Halloween weekend. It was a great time. I got to see some of my friends I haven't seen in a long time. Lexi came down. Everyone down here was dressing up and stuff. Going out to parties. I carved a pumpkin. I baked some cookies. I went to the bar. It was a fantastic, amazing time. And despite missing UFC Edmonton, we still nailed our predictions, man. 10-3. Absolutely amazing work, which brings our yearly total to 277-173, which it means we are finally plus 100 again. You know, we were plus 100 a bit ago, but we're plus 100 again, and we're going to be recapping everything that went down at UFC Edmonton as well. We're going to be looking at week number 9 of the NFL season. This episode is being recorded before the Chiefs and Buccaneers game. I'm rooting for the Bucs, but yeah, I'm also rooting for the Chiefs at the same time. It's a very weird scenario. I can honestly care less what happens, but I am happy the Minnesota Vikings won. So, of course, pop culture, new UFC news. We got all sorts of fun stuff on today's episode of the Surprise Jab Podcast. And kicking us off with some new UFC news, we have had a couple new fights announced. First one being this one for UFC 311 going down on January 18th, which for that UFC 311, I think the rumors circulating are we are going to get your UFC lightweight champion Islam Makhachev taking on the number one contender Armin Tsarukyan. Nurmagomedov, Khabib, his camp, the Nurmagomedov camp in general, they posted something on Instagram basically promoting this fight for January 18th for UFC 311. I guess we'll see where this takes place. Rumored to be Los Angeles, but I am excited and hope it takes place. One of the fights that will be going down on that card is a bantamweight matchup between Peyton Talbot and Ryony Barcelos. Peyton Talbot has taken the UFC by storm. Finishes of Reyes Cortez Jr., Cameron Samen, Giannis Gamori. He is 9-0, 3-0 in the UFC, all finishes. He's been an absolute killer, absolute killer. He takes on his toughest opponents to date, the veteran, the seasoned Ryony Barcelos. Ryony, 18-5 professionally, 7-4 in the UFC, holds wins over Said Nurmagomedov, Christian Quiñones, Chris Gutierrez. He is very tough to put away, but honestly, I'm backing Peyton Talbot in this one. The kid has been on absolute fire. Already has 181,000 followers on Instagram. He's just been popping off. He's been marketing himself super well, and I think he has the talent to move far in this men's bantamweight division. Fun fight announced as well. We finally get the UFC Tampa, Florida, UFC Tampa main event going down December 14th, the final event of 2024. The main event, welterweight matchup, the undefeated 15-0, 8-0 in the UFC, Ian Machado, Gary, ranked number 7 at welterweight, will be taking on Joaquin Numansa Buckley. That's right, Joaquin Buckley, 10-4 in the UFC. I believe he's 3-0 on the year. Biggest win of his career over Wonderboy Thompson last time out. Also beat Vicente Luque this year. Also beat, who is it, Nursultan Ruzaboyev, I think he also beat. He's been on fire. He's ranked number 9, and they're doing it in the main event. Incredible stuff. Ian Gary, I mean, he picked up a big win over MVP earlier. Nothing too incredible. Same with the Jeff Neal. Same with the Neil Magny. He's been kind of on a decision streak. He really needs to break that here. Get a big finish going, but it's going to be tough. Joaquin Buckley is no easy opponent to take on. I'll be looking forward to that one. I'll probably be back in Ian Gary. And what's interesting about that matchup is there was actually a clip from, I believe it was a year ago, where Ian Gary was telling Joaquin Buckley that he's not going to fight down in the rankings to fight him. And now look at it. Apparently no one above Ian Gary would fight him. And now he's wound up fighting Joaquin Buckley here. But as we look at the UFC rankings, I mean, honestly, look who's above him. Colby Covington, I think, did duck him. Okay, Sean Brady, I know for a fact, would not duck Ian Gary. Jack Del Malian has been nursing an injury. He would not duck Ian Gary. Shavkat's fighting for a belt. Usman and Edwards, both are just, you know, I doubt they were even offered Ian Gary. Maybe Leon was. I honestly don't really know. But, I mean, speaking of this welterweight division, UFC 310, of course, has lost its main event with Bilal Muhammad pulling out of his fight against Shavkat Rakhmonov. They are trying to find a replacement. There is word they might do Kamaru Usman versus Shavkat Rakhmonov for an interim belt. I really hope that's the case. There's also word Alex Pereira might take on Magomedov Ankalaev. I don't think Alex Pereira is fully healed yet, though. I'll be very curious to see what takes place. But Ian Garry, Joachim Buckley should be a fun main event. Another one coming at you, UFC 309 on the prelims. The number 9 ranked heavyweight Marcin Tybura will take on Hanata Dinas. Hanata was supposed to take on Derek Lewis this past weekend, but unfortunately pulled out of his fight. Derek Lewis, I don't know if it was some non-injury, non-illness related pull out. I don't know what was going on, but Hanata Dinas unable to fight Derek Lewis. Instead, will take on the number 9 ranked Marcin Tybura. Marcin, a 20-fight veteran in the UFC, over 30 fights professionally, nearing 35, actually. He's beaten Andre Arlovsky, Tai Tuivasa, Sergey Spivak. He is a game competitor. Hanata, 8-0, 2-0 in the UFC, yet to really leave an impact, I'd say, so far. But hey, big win over Marcin Tybura will put him right in the mix. And the final newest fight announced, this one for UFC 310, December 7th. We don't know the main event for sure now, but we do know in the men's featherweight division, Nate the Train Lanier, yet to be in a boring fight so far in the UFC, takes on the Korean Superboy, Doo Ho Choi. Doo Ho Choi got back in the win column with a big knockout of Bill Augeo this year. Super excited for him there. Nate Lanier, I mean, it's been tough going. You know, all he does is fight killers. Not in the win column yet this year, but ending the year with a big fight like this could be poised for something. I honestly do think that a big win for either of these men would put them right in the mix, throw them right at it. I'm here for it. Truly, I'm here for it. A lot of fun stuff going on in the UFC realm. You know, UFC 310 losing its main event. UFC 309 kind of being, you know, underwhelming. I'd say we got spoiled. UFC 308, we got spoiled. But we're still going to check out every single UFC event, including UFC Vegas 100. We'll have to check that out this weekend. I will be dropping my predictions for that later this week. Stay tuned. Carlos Brates, Neil Magny. Exciting work. Of course, every episode, as we always look at new UFC news, we also look at the top 10 new things in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film, always helping us out. I'm always here for it. Let's check it out. Top 10 new things in pop culture. First off, Outer Banks has been renewed for a fifth and final season at Netflix. Thank goodness. Let's end Outer Banks. I haven't even watched the fourth season at all. I've had no interest. I thought they should have ended it after season 3, but no, I guess not. I guess absolutely not. We just have to keep making these films. Just keep banging them out. But you know what? I think all the actors will go on and be super successful in other places in life. But I think, you know, they need to leave Outer Banks behind. Maybe I'll give season 4 a try when I have Netflix again, but I have so many shows that I could potentially watch. It's like I don't know what to watch. Number 2, Judy Greer, Sean Astin, Bryan Cranston, and John Goodman have been cast in Chili Finger. The film follows a mother who discovers a human finger in her bowl of fast food chili and begins to blackmail the restaurant. Ooh, I'm actually very interested in this. Judy Greer, love her. Sean Astin, a great actor. Bryan Cranston, John Goodman, their names are just synonymous with great acting. I'm very intrigued to see what comes of this film. You know, it's kind of goofy, kind of interesting, and it'll probably be a Netflix film. It'll probably be a Netflix film. Daniel Craig says he wants Netflix to give Knives Out 3 a full theatrical release. The people I speak to, all they want to do is take their families and go see it at the cinemas. Hopefully we can give them that experience. I'm going to be honest. The Knives Out films are theater-worthy experiences. They are great movies. It's crazy how everything ties back together. And it's the third one. It's the third one. I say you do it. You can make these films endlessly. You've hit a gem with these Knives Out films. But I don't know. It's called Wake Up Dead Man. You know, it's already got me intrigued. I just don't know if any theater wants to really push this. Because, you know, the theater business is slowly dying. Slowly dying. So, Daniel Craig, I hope they bring it to theaters. I would probably go see it. But we'll have to see. Trey Edward Schultz's new psychological thriller stars Jenna Ortega, Barry Keoghan, and The Weeknd. It will be getting a worldwide theatrical release. The film is titled Hurry Up Tomorrow after The Weeknd's new album. So it's just going to be The Weeknd making millions off of Pro and his new album. I do like Barry Keoghan. Do like Jenna Ortega. I don't know how to feel about this one. Number 5, The Black Phone 2 has begun filming. It hits theaters on October 17th, 2025. I've heard The Black Phone is a very good film, very scary, very eerie. Can't remember, who does it star? What's that guy's name? He was in, oh my goodness, Oh man, I can't picture his name, but he's a good actor. Gosh. Searching for it. He was in Leave the World Behind. He was in that one. What's that show? On Disney Plus, where it was the guy. He's Moon Knight. He was in Moon Knight. Whoever that guy was, the villain in Moon Knight. He stars in Black Phone 1, but Black Phone 2 does begin filming. Looks very. I don't know. I'll have to check it out. Number 7, a movie about the Trump assassination attempt is being discussed with JFK director Oliver Stone. Every time they try and make something with Trump, it never hits. It never hits. And the fact you're going to try and make a whole film about one moment where he almost got assassinated seems kind of like a reach. I think there's other things out there you can make. And speaking of other things you can make, holy cow, number 7, Jennifer Lopez and Anthony Ramos' Bob the Builder movie is moving forward at Amazon MGO Studios. The film follows Bob, named Roberto in this film, travels to Puerto Rico for a major construction job and digs deeper into what it means to build. That sounds so freaking dumb. I wish I never read that. I wish I had the words in my mouth. I wish I could take that all back. Ridiculous. Just ridiculous. Number 8, Speed Ratcliffe, a.k.a. the C-wordy boom mic operator from Saw, became a meme when images of him on set surfaced online. For the first time ever, he talks about his viral fame in an exclusive interview. I have no idea. I have no idea what they're talking about here. His nickname is literally the C-word. I'm not going to say that. But yeah, Saw, never saw the Saw movies. Never really were my cup of tea. Were never really my cup of tea. But who knows? Maybe I'll check them out. A lot of things you just have to go, maybe here and there. Maybe here and there, but it is. It is what it is. Number 9, Hugh Jackman responds to Martha Stewart saying that Ryan Reynolds can act funny, but he isn't funny. He said someone finally says it. I think Ryan Reynolds is funny. I think he's funny. Funnier than Martha Stewart. Let me tell you that, Martha. Get out of here. Get out of here, Martha Stewart. And finally, number 10, Venom The Last Dance has passed 300 million worldwide. Good for them. I didn't go see the film. I won't go see the film, but I've heard okay reviews. I've heard it's just an okay film. Those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. Not the most exciting things, but some interesting stuff here and there. Alrighty, now let's talk about something exciting that I was a part of this weekend, which was watching week 9 of the NFL season. Did we do good on predictions? No. No, we did not nail it. We did not win predictions this week. I don't even want to know what I got. But nonetheless, a lot of action went down. Some big fantasy performances. I actually went 4-1 this week in my 5 leagues. Sadly, the league I lost in is my worst league, which I paid $50 to get into. And I'm never getting those $50 back. But other than that, other 4 leagues, we won in. So we do have to find some positives there. Let's take a look at week 9 of the NFL season. It was week 9, right? It was week 9. What are the Vikings' record? That's how we can... Actually, yeah, it's week 9, because I know the Chiefs and Vikings have both been on a bye, so yes, it was week 9. Now, you always get confused as the season winds along. So we started things off Thursday Night Football, Texans taking on the Jets. Jets win 21-13. I did not see this one coming. Big performance from Garrett Wilson, 30 fantasy points, Devonta Adams 22.1, Aaron Rodgers 20.3 for the big three for the Jets getting it done. As for the Texans, Tank Dell at 18.6, Joe Mixon 16.6, CJ Stroud 11.5, just not going to get it done. Jets are now second in the AFC East with a 3-6 record, finally getting in the win column. As for the Texans, they are still atop the AFC South with a 6-3 record, but unfortunately suffering a defeat here. Not too good on the road. 2-3 on the road this year. Jets 2-2 at home. Good stuff there. I mean, tail of this game, you know, 10-7 heading into half. Then Jets went up 21-10. Kai Fairbairn hit a field goal with 39 seconds left, and then just nothing. Nothing. You know, Houston even got the ball back and just couldn't do anything with it. CJ Stroud 11-30, 191 yards. Only threw to 3 people all game. Only 3 people. Joe Mixon, 24 rushes, 106 yards, and a touchdown. The only great player, really, for the team. Tank Dell, 6 catches, 126 yards. Dalton Schultz, 3 catches, 21. Robert Woods, 2 catches, 44. Not going to do it, Texans. Not going to do it. As for the Jets, Aaron Rodgers, 211 yards, 3 touchdowns. Breece Hall, 15 rushes, 74 yards. Devontae Adams, 7 catches, 91 yards, and a tutty. Garrett Wilson, 9 catches, 90 yards, and 2 touchdowns. It was the Garrett Wilson, Devontae Adams, and Aaron Rodgers show. Good win For the Jets, that's all I can really say. Momentum staying with them as they look to somehow make the playoffs this year. They are in a tough position to do it, but hey, don't completely give up. String some wins together, keep it going, and the Jets will be back in the mix. As for the Texans, though, you know, I will say that the AFC South is in a good position. It's one of the better divisions to be in for them. They're already 2 games ahead of the Colts, 4 games ahead of the Titans, 4 games, not even be 5 games ahead of the Jaguars at this point. I mean, don't expect much of them, but big upset from the Jets. Not an upset here, though, as the Bills beat the Dolphins. They did avoid an upset in this one. 30-27 as Tyler Bass hits a game-winning 61-yard field goal to silence the crowd. Just kidding. They were at home. Bills win 30-27 at home. Devin Achane for the Dolphins, 32 fantasy points. Incredible performance from Achane. Tua had 17. Tyreek had 12. As for the Bills, Josh Allen, another 22-point game. Ray Davis, backup running back, 17 fantasy points. T-Bass, the kicker, 15. Bills, 7-2, 4-game win streak, 4-0 at home. This team's pretty good, approaching a plus 100 point differential. This Bills team looking to make a run this year. They are currently second in the AFC. I'm excited to see what this Bills team continues to produce all year long. As for the Dolphins, 2-6, 3rd in the AFC East, 3-game losing streak. Season's probably over. I just don't think they're going to be able to overcome this early season hump. This early season downer is just not overcomable for this Dolphins team. And they played so good, though. I mean, heading into halftime, you know, 10-6, they were winning. Okay, then it turned into 14-6, 14-10, 14-13. That turns into 21. That turns into 28, 27. Finally, Jaylen Wall scores a touchdown with under 2 minutes. And the defense, you know, just lets them march down the field. And just, you know, when Tyler Bass is hitting 61-yard field goals, there's not much you can do. Tua, 231 yards, 2 touchdowns. Decent game for him. 25 for 28 on completions. Achane, 12 rushes, 63 yards, and a touchdown. Also had 8 catches for 58 yards and a touchdown. Tyreek, 4 catches, 80 yards. Jonnu Smith, 5 catches, 46. I forget Odell Beckham's on this team. 3 catches, 15 yards. Dude's just trying to get money. I don't even know what Odell Beckham's still doing in the league. Buffalo, better game than usual for it's a divisional game. I usually expect this out of Buffalo. 235 yards for Josh Allen, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. James Cook, 10 rushes, 44 yards. Khalil Shakir, 6 catches, 50 yards. It was Matt Collins and Ray Davis catching the touchdowns. Amari Cooper didn't catch a single ball. Might have been out this game, I think. Good stuff from the Bills. Can't hate. Divisional game. Getting it done. Dolphins, not that good of a team, sadly. Broncos and Ravens. I thought this game would be a lot closer, but Ravens just refused to play to the level of the Broncos. Ravens win 41-10 in a blowout victory at home for the Baltimore Ravens. 6-3. They're oddly still second in the AFC North. 3-1 at home. Doing pretty good. 283 points for on the season. They've been incredible. Broncos, oddly 5-4, 3rd in the AFC West. The AFC West is very competitive this year. Broncos need to work something out. Cortland Sutton, 23.28 fantasy points. Bo Nix, 17.72. Those were the two best players. As for the Baltimore Ravens, Zay Flowers, 29.7 fantasy points. He had 24 by halftime. It was insane. Derrick Henry, 26.3. Lamar, 23.6. Yeah. Yeah, the Ravens are just freaking dominant. Zay Flowers had 2 first half touchdowns. It was 24-10 at halftime. After that, 2 more touchdowns in the third quarter from Patrick Ricard and Derrick Henry. Then Justin Tucker hit a fourth quarter field goal. I mean, truly after Will Lutz hit a field goal with 54 seconds left in the first half, the Broncos just tapped out. That was it. That was it for the Broncos. Bo Nix, 233 yards, 1 pick. Couldn't even get anything done. 36 yards rushing. Cortland Sutton, 7 catches, 122 yards, was the only one actually doing stuff. He actually did throw a touchdown, miraculously, to Bo Nix. I didn't even realize that. Wow. Cortland Sutton threw a touchdown to Bo Nix. That's how they got all those fantasy points. I was like, where did they get all those fantasy points? There you go. A little trickery right there. I mean, nothing much to be expected, though. Lamar Jackson, 280 yards, 3 touchdowns. Derrick Henry, 106 yards, 2 touchdowns. Zay Flowers, 5 catches, 127 yards, 2 touchdowns. Incredible. Incredible stuff from the Ravens. They're one of the best teams this season. They're scary. They're intimidating. And they're not fun to play against. not fun to play against. And even though they shockingly lost to the Browns last week, they were not going to go through that again, manhandling the Broncos. One of the Broncos' mates in the AFC West did pick up a win, though, to pass them. The Chargers, now 5-3, beat the Browns 27-10. Browns now find themselves bottom of the AFC North, 2-7, looking rough for the Browns. Defense of the Chargers here, incredible. They had 19 fantasy points. I mean, come on. J.K. Dobbins, 24.5. Quentin Johnson, 22. Justin Herbert, 19.48. This is the Chargers team. This is why they brought Harbaugh in, to lead the team to victory. Cedric Tillman for the Browns, 19.5 fantasy points. Jerry Jeudy, 14. Competitive game. Josh Palmer kicked off the game with a touchdown. After that, Dustin Hopkins scored. Quinn Johnson touchdown. J.K. Dobbins touchdown. Was 21-3 at halftime. Cedric Tillman got a touchdown with 44 seconds left to give the Browns something, but this was just the Chargers beatdown. Herbert, 282 yards and two tutties. J.K., 85, two tutties. Quinn Johnson, four catches, 118 yards and touchdown. Ladd McConkey, five catches, 64 yards. Ladd and Quinn Johnson actually performing pretty good. Josh Palmer had himself a nice little performance here. Good stuff. Jameis Winston, 235 yards, one touchdown, three picks. He even fumbled. This was just domination. Domination for this Chargers team here, and I loved it. I was eating it all up. Nick Chubb, 15 rushes, only 39 yards. Cedric Tillman, Jerry Jeudy, the only ones getting stuff done through the air. You know, it's rough. It's rough for the Browns this season, but it's kind of how it is every season, so it's like not that big of a surprise. I will say Chargers are in a prime position, only three losses on the year, plus 58-point differential, two-game win streak. I'm excited to see what they bring. Browns, keep it going. Keep doing it. I don't know. They play the Saints. That's a winnable game. Steelers isn't a winnable game. Broncos, I wouldn't pick them. Steelers, I wouldn't pick them. Chiefs, I wouldn't pick them. Bengals, I wouldn't pick them. Dolphins. Browns might be getting one of the top picks this year. Honestly, Commanders and Giants. Let's talk about Saints and Panthers. Panthers getting a crazy win over the Saints, and the Saints just fired their head coach this morning. Panthers win 23-22 in shocking fashion. Saints are now the worst team in the AFC South. Incredible. They started 2-0. They're now on a 7-game losing streak, 2-7. Yeah, so Panthers, they're also 2-7, and they get their second win of the year. Alvin Kamara, 27.5 fantasy points, was doing all he could for this team. Taysom Hill had 16, doing the best he could. Derek Carr, 13. Panthers, though, Chuba Hubbard, 21 fantasy points. Xavier Leggett, 13.9. And tight end Sanders, 12.7. First quarter, I mean, it starts off 6-0. Then Leggett scores, and Taysom Hill scores 14-6. Eventually turns into 14-10, heading into halftime. After that, Foster Moreau would catch a big touchdown in the fourth quarter. Chuba Hubbard touchdown. Chuba Hubbard got another touchdown, and they tried for a two-point conversion. And then I'm pretty sure Derek Carr got picked off. No, he didn't get picked off. I don't even know what happened. I think they went a quick four and out or something. It was ridiculous. Saints just did not have it going. Carr throws for 236 yards at Tutty. Kamara, 155 yards rushing. That's crazy. Taysom Hill got a touchdown. Did he get any catches? Taysom Hill had four catches for 41 yards. Where did Taysom Hill get all these fancy points? All he got was a touchdown and some catches. I don't know. Good stuff from Taysom Hill. Kamara, six catches, 60 yards. He was balling. But, man, Bryce Young, 171 yards, touchdown and a pick. Average stat line for him, but he leads his team to victory. Hubbard, two rushing touchdowns. The tight end, Jacoby Sanders, four catches, 87 yards. Leggett, four catches, 33 yards and a touchdown. Panthers escape with a win. Saints, embarrassing stuff. I don't know if I can pick them all year. I truly, this team is atrocious. Panthers are also pretty bad, but oddly, the Saints are worse. Oddly. We'll see how they do. I don't know if either of these teams are winning another game the rest of the year. Bengals took on the Raiders. Bengals win 41-24. Brock Bowers scoring a garbage time touchdown for me to get 15.5 fantasy points. Jacoby Myers, 18.5. Good stuff from him. Joe Shiesty, 29 fantasy points. Mike Gesicki, 27. Chase Brown, 26.7. It was not the people you would expect on this Bengals team that were balling out this week. But nonetheless, Bengals get the victory. Bengals overcome their early hunch. They're now 4-5. Still trying to catch up to the Ravens and Steelers. But this is where you start right here, guys. This is right where you start. Raiders join the 2-7 crew this week. They're on a 5-game losing streak. Only 168 points scored on the year. Not going to get it done. From the get-go, you know, it was 7-7. Jameer White actually got a touchdown, turned into 10-7, then it was 10-10, 17-10, all right? And then they give up two touchdowns in the third. Jack Jones gets a 29-yard pick six for the Raiders. Then they give up 10 more points. Brock Bauer scores with 22, scores with 41 seconds left. There's just nothing to be done. Gardner Minshew gets benched, only thrown for 124 yards. Desmond Ridder coming in, 74 yards, a touchdown, good for him. Madison, only 36 yards. Zamir White, only 10 yards, just atrocious. Jacoby Myers, Brock Bauer is the only highlights for this team. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, 5 touchdowns, 251 yards. Did throw that one pick six. Chase Brown, 120 yards, taking over the rushing game. Mike Gesicki, 5 catches, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. Incredible. Jamar Chase, 7 catches, 43 yards. Without T. Higgins in, Mike Gesicki stepping up. Good stuff for the Bengals. I don't doubt that they can make it to the wild card. You know, their competition is looking like it's going to be maybe the Colts, Chargers, Broncos. I mean, they can probably win out from all those teams. Raiders, I'm done. Raiders, I'm done. You know, they fire their head coach, trying to do anything they can. There's nothing you can do with this Raiders team. They're done for. They're atrocious. I'm sorry. Commanders and Giants in a fun divisional matchup. I was rocking with this team, man. Commanders are 7-2, 3-game win streak, 4-0 at home, 3-2 on the road. Big road win here over the Giants. Giants 2-7, 0-5 at home. 4-game losing streak. Yeah, it's rough to be a New York fan. But the Commanders, incredible stuff. Showing some adversity here. Okay, you know, obviously the Giants play the Commanders, Redskins, whatever you want to call them, tough every single year. And right here, they played them tough. But, man, Jaden Daniels put it together. 19.86 fantasy points. Austin Eckler, 17.3. Scary Terry, 15.9. And they get the victory. Giants, Daniel Jones, 24.36 fantasy points. Malik Nabers, 14.9. Did all that they could. Commanders just went up too early. Heading into half, it was 21-7. Then turns in to 24-10. Okay, Daniel Jones gets a touchdown. Siebert kicks field goal. Then Theo Johnson catches a 35-yard touchdown pass from Daniel Jones. They fail the two-point conversion. And then Commanders just don't give up the ball. Don't give up the ball. Defense just is never needed. All right, they stayed out there. Jaden Daniels, 29 yards, 2 touchdowns. Good stuff there. Eckler, 42 yards rushing and a touchdown. Other than that, I mean, Terry McLaurin had 2 catches. Both were touchdowns. Nothing too spectacular. This was just an overall good game for the Commanders. Daniel Jones, 174 yards and 2 touchdowns. Also rushed 54 yards for a touchdown. Was doing all that he could. Malik Nabers, 9 catches, 59 yards. It is Theo Johnson who caught the lone touchdown. And Manhurts, the tight end. Giants, sadly you suck. Commanders, incredible stuff this year. I'm loving what I see from the Commanders. Doing it every single week. Jaden Daniels running away with Rookie of the Year. Good stuff with the Commanders. Cowboys and Falcons giving us a fun one fantasy-wise. Interesting seeing this one take place. Falcons win 27-21. Cowboys are now 3-5. 3-game losing streak. It's rough. It's rough for the Cowboys. Falcons, though, top of the AFC South. 6-3. 2-game win streak. They're balling. Rico Dowdle, 21 fantasy points for the Cowboys. CeeDee Lamb, 16. Jake Ferguson, 14. Bijan, 21.5 for the Falcons. Darnell Mooney, 19.8. And Kirk Cousins, 17.78. This one, I mean, it was back and forth. Back and forth the whole game. You know, starts off 7-3 for the Falcons. Turned into 14-10. 10 for the Falcons. Then it was 21-10. 21-13. 28-13. 28-21. And then Falcons just, you know, held onto the ball. Cowboys ran out of time here. Dak Prescott got injured. 133 yards, a touchdown for him. Gets benched. He went injured, I meant to say. Cooper Rush comes in. 150 yards, a touchdown. Backup doing what he needs to do. Rico, 12 rushes, 75 yards. It is those 5 catches for 32 yards and a touchdown, though, that really puts him over the edge. CeeDee Lamb, 8 catches, only 47 yards. Could have done a lot more, but hey, had to work with the opportunities given. Kirk Cousins, 2-2-2 yardage-wise, 3 touchdowns. Bijan, 86 yards, also caught 7 catches for 59 yards. Ray McLeod had a touchdown. Drake London had a touchdown. And Darnell Mooney, top wide receiver, 5 catches, 88 yards, and touchdown. Kyle Pitts, fresh off his, what, 2-touchdown game or something, over 100 yards, 1 catch, 11 yards. Always comical to see. Falcons, loving what I'm seeing from this team. I'm excited for them to play the Vikings. That one's coming up December 8th, but they got the Saints next week. That's a winnable game. Broncos might be a bit tough in Denver. Chargers might be a tough game, but Falcons also do play the Raiders and Giants. Commanders and Falcons in there. Falcons, they have a tough schedule, but they also have some breaks here and there. So I expect the Falcons to finish with a pretty decent record. Fun game here. You would never expect. Titans and Patriots goes to overtime. Titans win 20-17. Fun matchup. honestly, this game surprised me. Came down to the wire, and I was invested. Titans getting the win here at home. 2-6 record on the year. They are third in the AFC South. You know, tough to see, but hey, it happens. Patriots 2-7. Bottom of the AFC East. One game losing streak. They are just rough. Only 141 points scored on the year. Ramondre Stevenson, 22.4 fantasy points. Drake May, 15.74. And Hunter Henry, 12.6. Tony Pollard, 18. Mason Rudolph, 17. Westbrook Ekwueni, 16 fantasy points. This one was fun right up until the end. You know, kind of a slow game. Kind of a slow game, you know. We're heading into the fourth quarter, and it is 17-10. 17-10. And then as time expires, Drake May gets 15 seconds in the pocket, is dodging people, gets sacked, throws the ball up in there. Ramondre Stevenson comes down with it, and we go to overtime, back and forth. Nick Folk hits a 25-yard gimme to give the Titans the win. Crazy ending. You know, I'm watching it with Lexi. I'm just like, all right, you know, this will be the end of the game. What if he makes this? Drake May comes through, gets the touchdown. It was a feel-good moment. Sadly, couldn't put it together in overtime, but good performance overall for Drake May. 206 yards and a touchdown, you know, despite the two picks. It's good for rookie QB thrown into this role. Also rushed 8 times for 95 yards. Ramondre got a touchdown on 10 carries. Hunter Henry, DeMario Douglas sharing all the catches. Same with Ramondre. I mean, this Patriots team is just, you know, no one's really sticking out on this team. Titans getting the win here. Mason Rudolph, 240 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Tony Pollard, 128 yards rushing on 28 carries. Calvin Ridley, 5 catches, 73 yards. And Westbrook Ekwueni, 5 catches, 50 yards and touchdown. He had himself a nice little game. Don't expect too much out of these teams this year, but hey, not too bad of a performance. I'll tell you who did perform bad. That was the Bears. Holy cow, 29-9. Bears can't even get a touchdown on this Cardinals team. And how about this? Cardinals at 5-4, 3-game win streak, are the top team in the NFC West. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought with the Rams, 49ers, Seahawks, the Cardinals would be the top team? Good stuff for them. Emery DeMercado, 16 fantasy points. James Conner, 14. Arizona defense, 13. No one even stood out. They were just better than the Bears everywhere it went. Normal Dunes, they had 15. DeAndre Swift, 14. Carlos Santos, 13 fantasy points. I mean, the second quarter was when Carlos Santos hit 3 field goals. After that, Chad Ryland hit field goal in the third. Then Chad Ryland another field goal. You know, Cardinals got a safety. I mean, this was just an embarrassing game overall. For both these teams, but Cardinals were way less embarrassing as they beat the Bears. Bears are now 4-4, 2-game losing streak, 0-4 on the road, bottom of the NFC North, and are being left in the dust of all the other teams. Caleb Williams, 217 yards, didn't do much. That was it, 217 yards, 22 for 41 completions. DeAndre Swift, 16 rushes, only 51 yards. Romo Odunze, 5 catches, 104 yards. DeAndre Swift, 6 catches, 31 yards. DJ Moore, 4 catches. Keenan Allen, 4 catches. Couldn't really do much. Couldn't really do much. Arizona defense was stout. And Kyler Murray, man, 154 yards. James Conner rushed for 107 yards. Trey Benson punching in a touchdown. Trey McBride rushed for a touchdown. It was a defensive battle here. And, you know, Cardinals just kept getting in range more often to hit all those field goals. So, good win for the Cardinals. Top of the NFC West. It's competitive, though. They're 5-4. Everyone else, 4-4, 4-4, 4-5. We'll see how they do. Bears, 4-4. It's going to be a tough race for that wild card spot. Bears are going to need to work themselves out of this hole. Fun matchup for me here. Eagles beat the Jaguars 28-23. Saquon Barkley going off. Devontae Smith going off. Jalen Hurts going off. This was a banger. Banger matchup all around. The game got good, too, out of nowhere. Eagles do win 28-23. They're 6-2 on a 4-game win streak in the NFC East. Jaguars, with a record of 2-7, are the worst team in the AFC South and are 0-5 on the road. Trevor Lawrence, 19.56 fantasy points, the only one doing anything. 32.9 fantasy points from Saquon. 29.9 from Jalen Hurts. 18.7 from Devontae Smith. Domination from the big three. Game starts off, it goes into halftime, it's 17-0. Then Jalen Hurts starts off the second quarter with a touchdown, 24-0. Okay, 24-0. Oh, actually, they tried for two. So wasn't it, did they try? It was 22-0. Then Trevor Lawrence scored a touchdown, got a two-point conversion. After that, Trayvon Walker gets a 35-yard fumble return on the first play, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it is 16-22. Okay, Devontae Smith catches a big 25-yard pass from Jalen Hurts. They fail on the two-point. It's 28-22. Trevor Lawrence scores again. No, it was 28-16. They score again. turns into 28-23. Eagles just don't give up the ball. A lot of that today. A lot of just teams not giving up the ball when they just had to hold on to it, and that really helped them win here. Eagles, gritty win here. Saquon and Jalen Hurts went off. Just went off. You know, for the Jaguars real quick, Trevor Lawrence, 116 yards and two picks. Atrocious. ETN, 3 rushes, 24 yards. Tank Bigsby, 8 rushes, 22 yards. Nothing. Trevor Lawrence did have 2 rushing touchdowns, comically enough. Evan Ingram, 5 catches, 45 yards is the only thing I can really point out. Jalen Hurts, 230 yards, 2 touchdowns. Also rushed 67 yards and a touchdown. Saquon, 159 yards and a touchdown. Also had 3 catches for 40 yards and a touchdown. Devontae Smith, 4 catches, 87 yards and a touchdown. With A.J. Brown getting injured in this one, you already know Devontae Smith stepped up. Good win for the Eagles. They'll continue to dominate. They'll continue to dominate. Jaguars, I love you, Brian Thomas Jr. Hopefully you can eat next weekend when you play the Vikings. And same with Tank Bigsby. I love Brian Thomas Jr. Love me a little Tank Bigsby. It's just tough going for those two. It really is with this Jaguars team. Lions and Packers, one of the better games of the week. 24-14, though. Lions had their number all week, or all game, I should say. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 18.6 fantasy points. Jahmyr Gibbs, 14. David Montgomery, 12.6. As for the Packers, Jaden Reed, 16. Josh Jacobs, 12. Jordan Love, 10. Held in check. Held in check. I'm not mad at this one. Not a big Packers fan. It also helped us pass them. Packers are now third in the NFC North. Lions are 7-1. They are the top team in the NFC. Second best team in the NFL. Hey, 4-0 on the road. Packers just looked rough. Just looked rough in this one. McManus got a field goal in the first quarter. After that, a 17-0 second quarter. Jahmyr Gibbs starts off the second half with a touchdown. 24-7, actually 24-3 turned into 24-6. Then with 3 minutes left, Emmanuel Wilson ran in a little pass. Then Jordan Love got a 2-point conversion. Game ends 24-14. Jared Goff, 145 yards and a touchdown. Had himself a decent game, but you know, it's always a team effort, defensive-wise, offensive-wise. There's never really a star for this Lions team. Montgomery, 73 yards rushing. Gibbs, 65 and a touchdown. Monra, 700 catches, 56 yards and a touchdown. Tim LaPorta had 2 catches. Other than that, nothing too much. Green Bay, Jordan Love, 273 yards and a pick. Might have gotten hurt in this one. Josh Jacobs, 13 rushes, 95 yards. Jayden Reed, 5 catches, 113 yards. I mean, nothing much. Packers are failing. Packers are failing, man. I don't know what to say. Coming off a loss here, I'd be shook if I was a Packers fan. I'd be worried that your team sucks. But, hey, big Vikings fan here. We're going to mention the Vikings in just a second. But just know, Packers are in third. Lions are in first. I honestly think the Lions are on a 6-game win streak, but I think the Vikings can beat them. I think the Vikings can win the NFC North. I think the Lions are going to get stunned one of these weeks, and we're going to tie it up, and it'll all come down to Week 18, and we pull through. Final 3:30 game, Rams beat the Seahawks in a fun matchup in overtime. Shockingly, Puka Nacua got injured in this game. Really, he got ejected. He threw a punch at a player. Ridiculous. DeMarcus Robinson steps up, though, for them. 27.4 fantasy points. Cooper Kupp, 21.4. Rams defense, 18. Incredible. Jackson Smith and Jigba has the best fantasy performance of the week with 37 fantasy points. Just leaping me to a victory in my 16-man fantasy league. Geno Smith with 22 and Ty Lockett, 15.3. 26-20. Good win for the Rams with Seahawks. They played so good. No scoring in the first quarter. Turns into a 14-3 lead for the Seahawks at halftime. Turns into 17-14 heading into the fourth quarter. Turns into Jackson Smith and Jigba catching a 14-yard pass with under a minute left to send to overtime. Then DeMarcus Robinson burns the secondary for the Seahawks for a 39-yard touchdown pass, and that was that. Matt Stafford, 298 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Kyren Williams, 22 rushes, only 69 yards. Passing game was on fire. Rushing game, not so much. Cooper Kupp, 11 catches, 104 yards. DeMarcus Robinson, 6 catches, 94 yards and 2 touchdowns. They were balling. Dal Puka and DeMarcus is wide receiver 2. As for Seattle, Geno Smith, 363 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. It was ridiculous. Ridiculous. Rams also had a 103-yard pick 6. I forgot to mention that. That's how their defense got so many points. Kenneth Walker, 25 rushes, 83 yards. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 7 catches, 108 yards, 2 touchdowns. That'll do it. That'll do it for you. Stud for the day. Tyler Lockett, 3 catches, 63 yards, and a touchdown. It just sucks to see them losing. It really does. They have all the tools, yet Seahawks find themselves 4-5, bottom of the NFC West, 2-game losing streak. It's unfortunate to see, but hey, Casualties of war. Rams 4-4 are second in the AFC West. I expect both these teams to play decent rest of the year. Final game for NFL Sunday. You had the Vikings take on the Colts. And after a slow start, Vikings put it together in the second half. 21-13. My Vikings are back in the win column. Very happy. Made me very happy. 6-2 now. Still, we have a plus 59 point differential. Incredible. And our defense only giving up 2 field goals. That was it. That was it. Only giving up 2 field goals. Our defense was on fire. 12 fantasy points for them. Justin Jefferson at 21.58. Sam Darnold 19. Josh Oliver 16.8. Great performance from the boys. Colts defense had 13 fantasy points as they got a touchdown. Josh Downs had 12, and Matt Gay, 9 points, scored all the offensive points for them. Starting off the first half, it was 7-0. Going into halftime, I think the Vikings fans are booing. Then we go to the fourth quarter, not the fourth quarter, third quarter, 2 passing touchdowns. Head to the third quarter, another passing touchdown. And Matt Gay hit 2 field goals, including one with 28 seconds left, but too little, too late. We catch the onside kick, take a knee, and that was that. Joe Flacco, 179 yards and an interception, was just looked lost out there. He looked tired. He looked lost. Didn't want to be there. Jonathan Taylor, 13 rushes, 48 yards, held in check. Josh Allen had 6 catches, 60 yards. He was probably the best thing that happened for the Colts this game besides their defense, and even that didn't do that much. Vikings, Sam Darnold, 290 yards, 3 touchdowns. They throw 2 picks, though, one in the red zone, which I didn't like. And Justin Jefferson threw a 22-yard pass, crazy enough. I don't even know who he threw it to. Did he throw it to Josh Oliver maybe or Addison? I don't know, but just Jefferson threw a pass, which was pretty cool. Aaron Jones, 21 rushes, 64 yards, held in check. Cam Akers, 6 rushes, 46 yards. He's our new RB2. JJ, 7 catches, 137 yards. Josh Oliver, 5 catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown. Jordan Addison, 5 catches, 42 yards, and a touchdown. Great win for the fellas. Colts, you know, rough stuff for them. Rough stuff. They've lost every game this season. Actually, I think every game they've played has gone down to a 1-score matchup. We'll see how they do. But Vikings play the Jaguars, Titans, Bears, Cardinals, Falcons, Bears, Seahawks, Packers, and Lions. I'm liking our schedule. We're definitely getting to double-digit wins this season. We'll just have to see how the rest of the year panders out. But that is your Week 9 NFL recap. With that, ladies and gentlemen, let's look at UFC Edmonton, talk about all the matchups, what we nailed, what we missed, and I'll send you all on your way home. Kicking off the night, you know, it was a 50-50 shot on the women's flyweight match between Jamie Lindhorst and Ivana Petrovic. I went with the lady from Norway, and she unfortunately lost. Jamie Lindhorst, the hometown lady of British Columbia, Canada, gets the split decision victory here. And I mean, nothing much really to tell you guys. 29 significant strikes to 25 in favor of Jamie Lindhorst. 50 total strikes to 67 in favor of Ivana Petrovic. Both women landed 2 takedowns, 2 minutes and 30 seconds control time for Jamie Lindhorst, 7 minutes and 45 seconds to Ivana Petrovic. Now, 1 scorecard. So I can't really get a gist of this fight without having watched it because the scorecards were 30-27, 29-28, 29-28. Round 1, Jamie Lindhorst landed 3 significant strikes. Ivana landed 1, but Ivana had 3 minutes and 23 seconds control time, which means I would assume she won that round. Round 2, Jamie Lindhorst outstruck her 10-9 significantly, but Ivana had 2 minutes and 43 seconds of control time. Round 3, looks like Jamie Lindhorst kind of ended it pretty strong. 16-15 in terms of significant strikes, landed 1 of 3 takedowns on their attempts. I mean, nothing much really here. Close fight. Ivana Petrovic is now 1-3 in the UFC. Both her losses are by decision. She was an underdog. They might invite her back. Who knows? Jamie Lindhorst also, instead of 1-2, she's 2-1 in the UFC on a 1-fight win streak. All of her fights have been decisions in the UFC. Good win from her. Both these women will stay in the UFC. You know, there's fights out there for them. I guarantee the women's flyweight division, it's pretty big. Nowhere really near the rankings. I mean, Ariana De Silva, we're going to mention her in a second. She lost. Maybe Jamie Lindhorst could take on her, but I don't know. Both these women will probably remain in unranked territory. Nothing too impressive here. After that, bantamweight division, we started it off, our little streak here, you know, we went 10-3 on predictions, we did pretty damn good. Cody Gibson, the favorite in this one, beats the hometown boy, Chad Anhelinger, 30-27, Sim, actually got 30-26 in there too, as he gets a unanimous decision victory. 16 significant strikes to 11, both men landed 59 total strikes, 5 of 6 on takedowns, 12 minutes, 25 seconds control time. That means 2.5 rounds. Cody Gibson was in control. 2.5 rounds. Absolutely crazy. Round one, 2 of 2 on takedowns, 3 minutes, 37 seconds. Round two, 1 of 2 on takedowns, 4 minutes, 39 seconds. Chad didn't even land a significant strike in round number two. Round three, Cody Gibson, 2 of 2 on takedowns, 4 minutes, 9 seconds. Stuck to the game plan, landed his takedowns. Did what he had to do. Cody Gibson improves to 22-10. 2-fight win streak now. He's 2-1 in 2024. Good stuff for him. You know, 37 years old. Got to keep stringing these together. That's how you advance. That's how you get some form of streak going. And then he did what he had to do. Good stuff, Cody. String them together. But, I mean, just grapple them. Landed 5 takedowns. Good for him. Chad, I mean, look, he's 1-3 in his last 4. You know, he's now sitting at 2-3 in the UFC. I wouldn't be surprised if they cut him. Takedowns have been a huge, huge deficit against him. Out of his 5 UFC fights, he has now been taken down 16 times. Yikes. Don't know if he'll come back, but, you know, good win for Cody Gibson. We're going to mention some other bantamweights on here. I think you can match Cody Gibson up with any of them, winners or losers alike. I don't know, but nothing too exciting. We got the prediction right at the end of the day. That's all I really care about. Following that, a split decision win here for Sergey Sadeh over Garrett Armfield, but which I'm being told was a bad call by the officials. They got this decision wrong. The judges did not get the scorecard right in this one. Sergey Sadeh wins on the scorecard by split decision, 29-28, across the board. He was the favorite. Totals from the fight, Garrett Armfield, 71 significant strikes to 68. Total strikes, 77-75 in favor of Garrett Armfield. Garrett goes 4 of 5 on takedowns for just under 5 minutes of control time. Sergey Sadeh goes 0 for 4 for just under a minute of control time. 3 submission attempts for Sergey, 1 for Garrett. Interesting stuff. Round one, Garrett outstrikes him 24-20 and lands a takedown. Round two, Sergey, Garrett outstruck him in round two, 43-39. Then Sergey Sadeh landed 9 significant strikes to 4, but got taken down 3 times in round three. So arguably, round three to Garrett Armfield, but it was the first two that were pretty close. I don't really mind. I got this one correctly. Sergey Sadeh, you know, he's younger at 28 years old. Actually, they're both 28, oddly, despite looking different ages. He's now 1-1 in the UFC. Both of his fights have gone to split decisions, and he'll remain here. Garrett sadly falls to a 2-fight losing streak, 1-2 in 2024. He's now 2-3 in the UFC. I think both these guys will stick around, but tough loss here. I think you do Garrett Armfield against Chad Ann Hellinger. Loser leaves, winner stays. And Sergey Sadeh, him and Cody Gibson, you can also do Sergey Sadeh and Cody Gibson. But I'd rather see Sergey Sadeh fight some other bantamweights out there. No, maybe a little Raul Rosas Jr., loser of Peyton Talbot and Raoni Barcelos, fights like that. But yeah, good win for Sadeh here. It was split decision. Judges didn't go with it. I predicted it correctly, so I don't really care. Good stuff, I guess. I didn't watch it. But the decisions just kept coming. Alexander Romanov takes on Rodrigo Nascimento in the men's heavyweight division. Romanov, ranked number 13, beats number 15th ranked Rodrigo, 30-27 across the board. 45 significant strikes to 31 in favor of Romanov. 87 total strikes, 48 in favor of Romanov. Romanov goes 6 of 10 on takedowns, 7.5 minutes of control time, only attempted a submission once in the first round. Romanov lands 4 of those 6 in round 1, 4 minutes and 47 seconds. Could have been a 10-8 for him. Round 2, Romanov lands 2 of 4, 17 to 10 significantly. Romanov keeps on the feet in round 3, outstrikes him 26-20. Romanov never gave Nascimento anything to work with. Good win for Romanov. 18-3 record now. Finally getting his first win of 2024. Getting his first win since July of 2023, actually. So it had been over a year. And I mean, we had talked about before, I mean, how this guy's losses were to Alexander Volkov, Marcin Tybura, Holton Almeida. His career losses are to the best of best. When he fights guys like this, he should normally win. Probably shouldn't have gotten the finish here, but hey, good win, Romanov. 18 wins now. Good stuff. As for Rodrigo, 0-2 now in 2024, losses to Lewis and Romanov. He'll remain. I'm sure of it. He'll remain. And I mean, there's unranked heavyweights out there. You got your Hanada Nunes, who just fought. You got your Waldo Cortez Acosta. Actually, I like that. Waldo Cortez Acosta, Rodrigo Nascimento. That's the fight to make. Romanov, though, getting a win. I could see them doing Romanov maybe versus the winner or loser of Marcin Tybura and Hanada Nunes. I could see them doing Marcos Rogério de Lima, who's ranked number 14, taking on Romanov. And I mean, Tai Tuivasa, I don't know if he has a fight coming off. Him versus Romanov could be a fight you do. There's options, but Romanov remaining relevant somewhat in the bottom 15 of men's heavyweight. Nothing too much. Finally, we got some stuff going in our next matchup as Yusuf Zalal, this guy, submits Jack Shorgan to 50K performance bonus in round number two. Yusuf Zalal is on an absolute roll right now. He's currently on a 6-fight win streak. Gets his third win of 2024. All three of his wins in the UFC by submission. All of his wins on this little win streak of his by finish. Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff from Yusuf Zalal. Getting his 9th career submission, he improves to 16-5-1. 3-fight win streak in the UFC this year. I mean, incredible stuff. Yusuf Zalal, great win here. Jack Shore, this one's unfortunate. Finished in round two. We correctly braced, by the way. Finished in round two for the third time in his career. Three losses in the UFC, 3 losses professionally. All have been finished in round number two. Second loss by arm triangle, too. Jack Shore, 2-fight losing streak, 1-3 in his last 4. I don't know if he's going to be hanging around much longer, but I know who is, Yusuf Zalal. And this was a close fight. Off the bat, you know, Jack Shore and him, 7-7 in terms of significant strikes. Shore goes 2-4 on takedowns in round 1. Yusuf 1-2. It was a takedown battle. Then Yusuf comes out, drops him early on, gets on top of him, takes the arm triangle from half guard, and that's it. Good win for Zalal. I was very, very pleased with this performance from Yusuf Zalal. Featherweight division, yeah, good one here. And honestly, he's earned a ranked opponent. Okay, he's earned a ranked opponent. Dan Ige, ranked number 14, a perfect test. Okay, a perfect test. You even do Edson Barbosa. Edson Barbosa at 15, Giga Chikadze at 12, Bryce Mitchell at 13. A lot of options for him, but I think Yusuf Zalal is warranted of matchup against ranked opponent. You know, on this little win streak of his, he's beaten Jarno Ahrens and Billy Quarantillo. I would also like to see him maybe fight a Jonathan Pierce. I think him versus Pat Sabatini could be a really good matchup. But Yusuf Zalal, one of the better redemption stories of 2024. And hey, let's say Alex Pereira and Ito Pereira don't exist. He could be in conversation for Fighter of the Year. You never know. After that, we kept the action rolling as Charles Air Jourdain drops down to bantamweight and gets a round two standing guillotine choke on Victor Henry. Charles Jourdain, 6th career submission, 14th career finish. He improves to 16-8-1. Gets his first win since September 2023. Oh my gosh, he was 0-2 in 2024. Split decision loss to Sean Woodson, knocked out by Gene Silva. And here he is going down to bantamweight. He's found a new weight class and it worked to success. Great win here for Charles Jourdain. Victor Henry, I mean, game plan was simple. Land the takedown. He landed 2 in round 1 and 2 in round 2. Jourdain did outstrike him in round 1, 28-18. Round 2, he was outstriking him 11-6. And I mean, on that, I mean, you know, I don't even know if it was a takedown attempt, but whatever happened, Jourdain just got a hold of his neck, started cranking, and that was that. The 37-year-old Victor Henry had no choice but to tap. And this was the first time in his career he's ever been finished. That's right. Great win for Charles Jourdain. Always happy for him. Always happy for him. And I mean, we're going to mention Pedro Munhoz in just a second, but I think Charles Jourdain versus Pedro Munhoz, Charles Jourdain versus Cody Gibson, those are great fights for him. Okay, I love matchmaking on the same cards. It's so easy. You even got Miles Jones and Cody Garbrandt fighting. Them versus Charles Jourdain could be a fun fight. That's going to be next weekend. But Charles, man, this is such a feel-good win for him. He's always had the toughest fights. I mean, every time he's lost, it's been to killers. It's been in battles, split decisions and stuff. Finally getting a win here in front of his home nation of Canada. And hey, good win. Getting a finish. 50K performance bonus as well. Good stuff for Air Jourdain. After that, Amin Zahabi, Pedro Munhoz. We freaking called it, guys. Amin Zahabi outboxes Pedro Munhoz through 3 rounds. Well, round 3 debatable, but Amin Zahabi getting it done. The 36-year-old from Quebec, Canada, getting a win. So up to this point on the prelims, Canada had 1 win, 1 loss. They were 1 win, so 2-1. Then they were 3-1. And then they were 4-1. So yeah, 4-1 so far for Canada. On the prelims, Amin Zahabi, 109 significant strikes to 95. Total strikes, 110 to 95. Pedro goes 0-6 on takedowns. Amin 0-1. I mean, good win for Amin Zahabi. 30 significant strikes to 26. Outstruck him in round 1. 41 significant strikes to 22. His best round of the fight. Round 3, Pedro did outstrike him 47-38 significantly. But Zahabi, man, make it a 5-fight winning streak. 2-0 in 2024. And he's moving up the ranks. Amin Zahabi moving up the ranks. And he's earned himself a ranked opponent. That's what you get. You know, you got 15th ranked Montel Jackson in the mix, 13th ranked Jonathan Martinez, dare I say number 12 ranked Kyler Phillips. I love that matchup. Zahabi, welcome to the rankings. Love that performance from him, by the way. Just a great performance. He wasn't really, you know, plus 110. You know, he was an underdog, but he wasn't really the underdog. He wasn't really. The finishes will come here. They are a Helwani lookalike getting it done. Pedro, 3-fight losing streak now. Hasn't won since April 2023. And, you know, currently, as of his last 7 appearances, he is 1-5 with a no contest. Never been finished, never been dropped, but he's now 20-10. All 10 of those losses coming in the UFC. It's looking bleak for Pedro Munhoz. He's going to get fed to someone. You know, we got a lot of fires on here. Like I mentioned, you got Cody Gibson, Sir Ace of Day. I really like a Charles Jourdain fight, too. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with Pedro, but Pedro, man, he nicknames Young Punisher. He's 38. He ain't no spring chicken. You know, time's a ticking on his career. Who knows how many more Pedro Munhoz fights he got left in him. And into the main card, Mike Mallett taking on Trevin Giles. And this was not the Mike Mallett we were expecting. You know, he got it done. He beats Trevin Giles. Outstrikes him 59-34 across the fight. You know, wins by unanimous decision. But it was a very, very calm Mike Mallett. You know, that Neil Magny loss kind of changed something mentally in him. 11-2 record now. First time he's ever gone the distance. So, you know, kind of getting some experience here and there. But yeah, good win. We predicted it. Canada moves to, 5-1 now, if we're doing our predictions. And actually, as I look through, I think they finished the night 5-6-1. Yeah, they finished 6-1. I think that Chad Anhollinger was the only Canadian to lose. So that's actually pretty good. But yeah, Mallett outstrikes him through every round, 12-9, 28-17, 19-8. Trevin Giles just, he has all the skills, just can never put together. Giles, 3-fight losing streak now. He's probably done. You know, he's 2-5 in his last 7. Nothing impressive here. But Mallett, man, you know, he's one of the up-and-comers, 32 years old, one of the better fighters out of Canada. Good stuff there. He's not ready for the rankings. Not in the slightest. And welterweight has a lot of competitors. Welterweight has a lot of competitors. I'd like to see him take on another veteran. Maybe a Santiago Ponzinibbio, maybe loser of Neil Magny and Carlos Prates, Vicente Luque even, you know, I don't know. It's tough with Mallett, but gets the win. Reminds me of just one of those fights where it's like, I just have to win. And that's what he felt like, so got it done. Third performance bonus of the night goes to our upset of the entire night as Dustin Stolfus knocks out Marc-Andre Barriault. I just realized Mark lost, so Canada went 6-2. There it is. As he gets a crazy upset here, Dustin Stolfus getting his third career knockout, the fourth time in his career that Marc-Andre Barriault has been finished. And I mean, we're in round one. They're trading in the clinch, okay? And they're trading, and Mark is just leaving his chin wide open. Dustin's landing, clips him with a right hook, lands a left hook that just actually was a right hook that landed straight on the button and down with Barriault. Stolfus landed 2 follow-up shots, and that was that. That was that, and there's a lot of clinch work here. Okay, the fight lasted 4 minutes, 28 seconds. 3 minutes, 55 seconds of that was clinch work in favor of Dustin Stolfus. Finally, Barriault separates, and Stolfus just lands clean. Stolfus back in the win column. First win since December. And hey, good stuff. He's been win-loss, and this was a must-win for him. This was a must-win. You know, he's now 4-4 in the UFC. So what do you need to do? Scratch that. He's actually 3-5 in the UFC. But hey, Stolfus, you'll remain. You'll remain relevant. And hey, middleweight division, always taking killers here and there. You got fighters coming at you left, right, and center. Good stuff all around. Hey, how about the loser of Roman Kopylov and Chris Curtis? That matchup's coming up. I think we give him someone fun. I think we give him someone feisty. I mean, you got Eric Anders and Chris Weidman fighting. He could take on the winner of that. You got Julian Marquez, too. You know, Zach Reese and Cedric Dumas got a fight coming up. I'm here for him. I'm here for all of these fights. But yeah, Stolfus, crazy upset. No one saw him winning by knockout. Big, big hitter betting-wise. And got a 50K performance bonus. Barriault is now 0-3 in 2024. 3-fight losing streak. It's looking bleak. It's looking bleak on the career of Marc-Andre Barriault in the UFC. 34 years old. Definitely not one of the better fighters out of Canada. He's had some cool finishes here and there, but yeah. 0-3. Been knocked out in back-to-back fights in round one. It, like, fully knocked out. Yeah, Stolfus. Stolfus's time is here. Barriault's time to go. After that, the most dominant performance I saw all night. Jasmine Jasu Devicius Ariana DeSilva in the women's flyweight division. The number 14th ranked Jasmine decimates number 13th ranked Ariana DeSilva. She'll take her spot in the ranking. She'll look up. You know, I think Amanda Ribas, Viviana Ruggiero are great matchups for her, but this was domination. Jasmine Jasu DeVicious improves to a very impressive Canadian, by the way, record of 12-3. And Jasmine gets her third career submission. Good win for her. And just obliteration. Obliteration. Three-fight winning streak now. 3-0 in 2024. And her second finish in round three. Her second round three submission of 2024. And hey, by the way, her only losses in the UFC. Natalia Silva, Tracy Cortez. Those are your number 6 and number 12 women in the rankings. That's what you got to do. 42 significant strikes at 36. Ariana De Silva, you know, got a couple significant strikes landed in round one. But once Jasmine got going in round two, that was game over. 130 total strikes to 43 in favor of Jasmine, including 83 in round two. Lands 3 of 5 takedowns, 5 minutes, 44 seconds. Then she was able to find the Darce choke on the ground, and Ariana De Silva had no choice but to tap. Great win for Jasmine, Jasu DeVicious. Ariana De Silva, 0-2 now in 2024, 2-fight losing streak, 17-10 record now. Tough loss. Really tough loss. You know, she'll look down in the rankings. Got Casey O'Neill below her, but probably an unranked competitor. Probably an unranked competitor. Jasmine's looking up. Jasmine's looking to the top 10, probably around the top 10. I'm liking what I'm seeing from her. And hey, look at that. Jasmine, minus 205, was the favorite. Gets it done. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. After that, we're supposed to have Derek Lewis versus Ananda Diaz, but now Derek Lewis pulled out, so instead we get treated to a light heavyweight matchup between Brenson Ribeiro and Kyle Machado. And all I've heard about this fight is how bad it was. I've heard this was an atrocious fight. I've heard both these guys should be cut, and neither of them looked UFC caliber. Not at all in the slightest. Kyle outstrikes Brenson 76-49, significantly, and total strikes. Neither man attempted a takedown. And honestly, I was told this just looked like a sloppy sparring matchup. Kyle outstrikes him 22-16 in round 1, 22-12 in round 2, and 32-21 in round 3. Yet two of the three judges see it 29-28, going to Brenson the Gorilla Ribeiro. We correctly predicted that, though. He was the underdog. We correctly predicted it. But, I mean, nothing impressive. You know, he's 1-2 now in the UFC. First win of 2024. First win since 2023. Good win for him, but a split decision where no one thought you won. Not the best look. 16-7 record now. As for Kyle Machado, he's getting cut. You know, Kyle lost the split decision, but, you know, as bad as Brenson looked, Kyle looked awful from what I've heard. Just awful. 0-3 now in the UFC. All decisions, 8-4 record now. Hasn't done anything notable. Kyle Machado's getting cut. Brenson, man, there's light heavyweights out there. There's light heavyweights out there. You know, no one in the rankings. No one in the rankings for you. Maybe Devin Clark. You know, there's just a light heavyweight name that I can think of. But honestly, no one for you. Just a boring performance. Kyle Machado, cut him. Brenson, give him some unranked guy. Finally, we get to the co-main event of the evening, which I didn't realize was 5 rounds. I did not realize this fight was 5 rounds between the number 3-ranked Aaron Blanchfield, number 5-ranked Rosalba Yunes in the women's flyweight division. But thank goodness it was, because Aaron Blanchfield drops the first 2 rounds to Rose and fights back to win the final 3. Aaron Blanchfield, 48-47s across the board, gets the win. Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff from Aaron Blanchfield. She was ranked number 3. She'll remain number 3. And she might be getting a title shot after Amanda Fiora in a Valentina Shevchenko fight. Who knows? Maybe she fights Alexa Grasso. I like all those options. Great win for her. 110 significant strikes in 94 in favor of Aaron Blanchfield. 193 total strikes, 101. 2 of 8 on takedowns for 9 minutes of control time. Rose lands 1 takedown for only 15 seconds of control time. Round 1, Rose outstrikes her 30-19, and I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, are we going to get a repeat of the Man and Fiorot Aaron Blanchfield fight? Are we going to get another Rose Namajunas just casually outstriking someone? Round 2, sort of a switch. Aaron outstrikes her on the feet, 25-23. Rose lands a takedown. Lands a takedown in the round, 8 seconds control time. That was that. We head to round 3. Aaron lands a takedown of her own, 3 minutes, 38 seconds control time. Held her there the whole round. Round 4, this one's fought on the feet. 40 significant strikes to 25 in favor of Aaron Blanchfield. You're kind of like, holy cow, Aaron has worked her way completely back. Tie fight going to the final round. Aaron lands a takedown, 4 minutes, 8 seconds control time. Hammers her face on the ground, and Aaron Blanchfield dominates to a round 5 decision victory. Good win. Good win for Aaron, her first since August of 2023. First win, happy for her, getting a win, especially over Rose Namajunas. We no longer have to see boring Rose Namajunas fight in the UFC. No, she's not retiring, but, I mean, 14-7 now. Great win. Erin Blanchfield, like I said, she's ranked number 3. Number 1 ranked Alexa Grasso is probably her next opponent. Who knows who else, you know? And Rose, she was linked to a fight with Macy Barber, ranked number 4. I still like that fight for her. I also like number 6th ranked Natalia Silva, number 11th ranked Karine Silva. There's some options there for Rose, but man, they just get harder from here for her. Great win for Erin. Happy for her. I'm an Erin Blanchfield fan. With that, we got to the main event, and turns out Amir Albazi is not ready for top-level UFC competition. Holy cow. Brandon Moreno takes him to school, 50-45s him. I think one judge gave him a 49-46. That was wraps. The number 2 ranked Brandon Moreno beats the number 3 Amir Albazi by unanimous decision. Did not miss much is what I meant to say. Brandon Moreno just schooled Amir Albazi on the feet. 132 significant strikes, 63. Amir landed one takedown for only 9 seconds control time. I mean, that was that. Outstrikes him 18-16 in round 1. 29-6 in round 2, 31-12 in round 3. Best round from here, 20-22-20, round number 4. Round 5, 32-9. I mean, this was just a masterclass from Brandon Moreno. Brandon Moreno, your men's former flyweight champion, improves the 22-8-2 and gets his first win since January 2023. Long time coming for Moreno. Moreno needs a break, though. I mean, holy cow. Dude has been fighting 5-round fights since freaking, oh my gosh, the last 4 years or something. Amir, humble in defeat, said he wasn't ready. This will be his first UFC loss, snapping a sadly long 6-fight win streak. But hey, it happens. Amir will be back. Brandon will be back. The flyweight division is the big mystery, though. Okay, UFC Edmonton, we'll leave that behind now for a second. It was an okay event. Nothing too spectacular. You missed a Dustin Stolfus shocking knockout, a feel-good Jasmine, Charles, and Yusuf submissions. That's all you really missed. Erin Blanchfield, Brandon Moreno dominate in decisions. Just a long way to end the night. Nothing too exciting. But as I was going to mention, flyweight division, okay? Alexander Pantoja is welcoming the new Kai Asakura to the title picture at UFC 310 in December. Number 1 ranked Brandon Royval now has recently beaten Tatsuya Taira and Brandon Moreno. So he's technically a number 1 contender. But if Pantoja wins, we really don't need to see that again. So I think you got a lot of options here, okay? Tatsuya Taira and Brandon Moreno, you could do that fight. You could even do a rematch between Kaikar France and Brandon Moreno. You could do Kaikar France versus Brandon Royval. You could do Amir Albazi versus Tatsuya Taira. I mean, there's just so many combinations in the top 5. So many combinations. I just, if it was up to me, if I'm the matchmaker, I'm saying, you know, depending on the outcome of Pantoja and Kai Asakura, which I'm still torn on, because, you know, it's tough when you give a guy a title shot in his first event. You never know how good he's going to be. And we know how good Pantoja is. Let's just say Pantoja retains. For simplicity, Pantoja retains. Kai Asakura goes away for a while. All right? You could do Kai Asakura and Brandon Moreno. Okay? But what I think you do, Kaikar France is coming off a big knockout. Him and Brandon Royval had a fight of the night, 2-round fight, like 3 years ago. I say you do Royval versus Kaikar France for the next title shot. All right? Brandon Moreno takes the back burner, takes on Tetsuya Taira, takes on Kai Asakura if he loses. And hey, you know, as for Amir Albazi, you have Alex Perez at 6. That could be a comeback fight. Number 7th ranked Natsuo Mabayev is hungry. Manel Cape has a fight. If he wins that, I'd love to do that. And you could even have him fight Steve Ursic. There's a lot of options there. The flyweight is now in a great position. And hey, Brandon Moreno proven that he's still the most dominant guy outside of the champion. Good stuff there. After that, we will head to UFC Vegas 100 this upcoming Saturday, November 9th, the 100th UFC Apex event, the last Apex event of 2024, thank goodness. Got some okay fights on here. I mean, oh gosh, Cody Stammen, Damon Blackshear should be competitive. Elizio Zaleski dos Santos, Nicholas Dalby should be good. Gerald Merchart welcomes the former ONE Championship champion, Renard de Ritter, to the men's middleweight division. Leon Panero and Jillian Robertson give us ranked women's strawweight action. Carolina Kowalski and Denise Gomez, ranked women's strawweight action. Cody Garbrandt, co-main event against Miles Johns. In the main event, Carlos Prates could be potentially your debut fighter of the year as he takes on the number 15th ranked welterweight, Neil Magny. Exciting stuff to come. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got for today's episode. Decent events, decent week 9, decent Edmonton events. It was an okay weekend. It was Halloween weekend. Everyone was partying for Halloween weekend. That's all you need to know. I'm going to try and solve some issues with my classes. I'm going to try and have a productive week. I'm going to watch a little Kill Tony tonight. I'm going to cook a Jack's Pizza. And you know what you guys are all going to do? You guys? You know what you guys are all going to do? you're going to make sure you catch me. No, it didn't work. I was going to try and segue into saying, I'll catch you next time on. I kind of butchered that. But as you all know, I say it again. I'll say it a million times. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Thank you, folks.